our agenda today. We'll move on to our first action item, which is the... Pardon me for a moment. Which is the Green Diamond, item number two. So this is a time and place for a hearing by the board to consider...
...recover impaired watersheds and achieve TMDL load allocations. And again, the monitoring program will help verify that over time. Every TMDL implementation plan adopted by the board has included management measures, inventory prioritization, and cleanup of legacy sediment sources, and protection of riparian shade, which all of which this permit has. Plus, it has the in-stream restoration component to take it another step. Another comment that we received was that there was redundancy in the permit to other regulations, and we do rely in part on the Fish and Game Master Agreement, the applicable forest practice rules, and Green Diamond's Aquatic Habitat Conservation Plan. Water quality-related requirements of these other regulations are included as enforceable requirements under the order, and the order is intended to work in conjunction with and to supplement existing regulations in order to implement the basin plan. While many of the measures are shared with other regulations, the permit also has conditions that fulfill our specific needs to address legacy sediment sources, TMDL requirements, and adds coverage for in-stream restoration projects. The permit also brings in an extensive monitoring program that goes far beyond what we receive under our current regulatory efforts in the timber world at our office, and it will give us specific feedback about the success of the management measures and will tell us over time how the condition of these watersheds is changing and improving. Finally, we had some comments about extending the comment period for review of the report of waste discharge documents from Green Diamond, and although there was no requirement to publish the report of waste discharge for public comment, we wanted to provide an opportunity to review these documents based on comments that we received at the public workshop on August 23rd. During that extended comment period, we recognized in our responses that there was some confusion about the authorship of the document that's titled Review of Green Diamond's Timber Harvest Operations and Forest Management Activities as They Relate to Rate of Harvest and Cumulative Watershed Effects, short called the White Paper. We clarified that in our responses. The comments in the extended period focused on the white paper authored by Green Diamond and on the Klein 2012 paper. But we did not rely on either of those documents in developing the findings and conclusions of the draft order. The issue of cumulative effects and rate of harvest was the focus of those two papers, and as I said before, we rely on extensive management measures, protective riparian buffers, and inventory and treatment of legacy sediment sources to address cumulative effects, and a comprehensive monitoring program will verify implementation and effectiveness of this approach and allow for adaptive management. There was another comment about the availability of turbidity monitoring data, and with the conditions of the monitoring reporting program, monitoring summaries will be provided to us as a requirement, and raw data can be made available to us upon request so that we can conduct our own analysis. Changes to the WDR were non-substantial. We made some typographical edits and some other minor changes for clarification and consistency. There was one late comment submitted on September 28th, signed by previous commenters. It asked again for the less than 1.5% harvest rate and attempted to introduce three additional scientific papers. It also suggested that impacts to two types of smelt fish were not examined. However, the EIS CEQA document determined that native fish, including smelt, would benefit from the same conditions as the covered species, including cool, clean water and access to complex, diverse habitat. We recommend that you do not accept the late comment. And attachment E to the permit, the CEQA findings, is now available at the back of the room, as are the response to comments from the extended comment period. And if you have any questions.
Katie, thank you very much. I want to in the record that we will not accept the late comments, first off. Thank you. I agree with that. And any comments from board members?
I had a question. Could you please Blaine, I believe it's in the permit, but it is difficult to tease out the specific limitations on the rate of cut for Elk River that remain under the permit.
In Elk River, under the previous permit that is being superseded by this one, the important elements of which were included in this permit, under the old one, there was a limit that Green Diamond had come up with themselves that we agreed to, and it was 750 acres over a 15-year period, including the five-year period prior to the adoption of the WDR, which was zero. So that works out to about 75 acres a year.
Right.
And so when we had them update the South Fork Elk Management Plan, we had them, instead of having a fixed time frame like that, instead say 75 per year.
Can you be just a little clearer how that's in the permit? Because the confusion is we got, at least from my standpoint, we have on number 21 supersedes the old permit. If you read this, it's really hard to see what you told me, and I believe it's in there, but just trace it to the language here, to the limitation, I think would be helpful to the public and make it a clear permit.
The limitation is actually included in the South Fork Elk River Management Plan, which is attachment
C. Right, that's
C.
what I wanted to make clear.
And that document has a number of site-specific elements for the Elk River that Green Diamond implements.
And then we incorporate the permit, just to make clear, because I think if you were reading it from the public, it might be difficult to
understand that was included,
Point of order to the chair. Do you have the authority to make a decision on whether that material is included in those papers?
I believe you have a speaker card in play here, so we'll address that when you.
Point of order, the process, you just made a decision. Do you have the authority to make that decision?
Sir, I don't think we made a decision at all.
You
I think there was.
A decision not to accept. You said you were not going to accept
late. We did not accept late comment period. Would you let me speak, please, sir?
Yes, sir.
There was a late comment letter that came in after a very specific extension of 7 days. The comment period, the letter that came in, sounds like that was substantively addressed, and we deny the late comment letter. I believe the question from Board Member Corbett was whether a clarification about how the Elk River harvest came into this and the provisions for Elk River specifically are in this permit.
Chair Norland, I represent the organizations who represent today. I represent the organizations who wrote that letter.
Mr. Chair.
You had there from this.
Excuse me for a minute, 1 minute, please.
It's a legal point.
Thank you for that. We'll get back. Mr. St. John.
I just wanted to answer Mr. Corbett's question about the linkage in the order to the South Fork, Green Diamond South Fork Elk River Management Plan. So it's on page 13 of the order under section 3, specific conditions for the South Fork Elk River watershed. And it says the following conditions apply where Green Diamond owns and conducts timber harvesting activities in the South Fork Elk River watershed. A, South Fork Elk River Management Plan. All THPs in the South Fork Elk River must adhere to that plan, included as attachment C. So it's referencing to attachment C, which is therefore part of this order.
Right. I just wanted to make it clear because I think first of all, when I read it, I had trouble and I had to ask staff and get, but I just think if the average person read it, it's very hard to see that, even though it's in there, and that's why I wanted the clarification for the
good.
Record.
I'm glad for the clarification.
Thank you. Any other further board comment or questions to Ms. Kim? Katie, we'll have you back up. I would like to, I have a few speaker cards on this. I would ask, Felice Pace is the first speaker.
How much time do you have?
We allow 3 minutes per speaker, Felice.
3 minutes per speaker?
That's correct.
Did you receive that request?
I did receive that request. We have a general policy that you need to be here in person. We receive written comments, Felice, from all of the organizations from which you say you represent. We're aware of those comments. You've got 3 minutes.
We have 10 points on there. We want to first say we appreciate the effort of staff and the improvements GDR has made in their management. Staff has failed to apply the best available science on sediment and timber harvest. You have every top scientist operating on the North Coast who says there should be a limitation on how much activity you can, on disturbance over a period of time. That's the best science. Your staff doesn't want to accept that. In the 7 days they had to respond to that long paper, confusing paper, in terms of authorship, Randy Klein, the scientist, said they didn't have time to respond to it. So, you know, then you got a letter afterwards from an environmental group, and you say, well, we can't consider that. 7 days for a big, thick paper with lots of graphs and lots. That paper, by the way, the Farm Bureau makes a big deal out of peer-reviewed science. That paper is not peer-reviewed. All these other papers from the independent scientists are peer-reviewed. So your staff is proposing to rely on non-peer-reviewed science and hang their hat on that. I want to read one quote to you from the recovery plan for coho salmon. The impacts of Green Diamond's timber harvest, even if carried out under the now finalized habitat conservation plan, would result in the loss of pool habitat, loss of large wood and stream complexity, altered hydrology and nutrient cycling, and increased sediment loads. Changes in habitat conditions will have a negative effect on all life stages of coho salmon utilizing these areas. This so-called robust monitoring system has very few sediment monitoring sites, none, John, in the Klamath River Basin. That's not robust in my view. The Klamath River Basin is half of this region. They're cherry-picking. They cherry-pick the watershed where there aren't the kinds of sediment problems. And, you know, the result is the kind of ocean pollution I show you in that last slide. We didn't have time to get the slides up. I apologize to the folks in the audience for that. But I have a few of these papers you can look at. So, you know, not using the best science, not a sediment monitoring that's very suspect, a lot of nice graphs and assertions, but not much, and no peer-reviewed science that you're hanging your hat on in terms of that document. So the AHCP, you got the word of, they're not water quality people anyway. You know, so we think this best science is saying you got to have a limitation, 1.5% on the rate of harvest in a decade. You know, that's the best science. That's what should be relied on. It's not relied on here. This is going to set a precedent, okay? This is the first one of its type. There's a comment there, by the way, that you bifurcated into two permits. And we have questions about the environmental document if it really considers all the impacts because we have two separate permits here. There's a budget issue there. We hear from staff. We don't have staff to regulate everybody in agriculture. But yet, we have two permits here instead of one permit. The original idea was for one permit covering the activities. Now we've taken a single industrial process and we've separated it into a road WDR and a timber, you know, a logging WDR. That's not the way to do it, and it's going to cost more staff time, and it's going to cost more time to monitor two and to participate in two processes. So time for staff, extra time for staff, budget considerations there. I think we need one permit, you know, for one industrial operation, and that's it. I know I've, thank you for giving me the extra time. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you very much for your comments.
Do you have any questions? Anybody?
Any comments from Mr. Pace? Thank you, Felice. Appreciate it very much. Mr. Wayne Whitlock.
Thank you. I'm Wayne Whitlock. I'm with the law firm Pillsbury Winthrop, and I'm here on behalf of Green Diamond. I wanted to, we've had many opportunities to discuss this permit, but I wanted to comment from a legal and a regulatory perspective about some of the issues that have been raised here today. First of all, the initial effort here was to prepare a habitat conservation plan that really focused on protecting and improving water quality and aquatic habitat. Years ago, this effort started. It resulted in this federal habitat conservation plan, and it really does have the focus of protecting water quality. There were a number of documents prepared, including the EIS that this process relies on, and all the efforts have been now incorporated into this forest management WDR process. And I want to just to comment on this notion that's being raised about there's really only one way to protect, to deal with cumulative effects. And that's really what the harvest rate issue is all about, is addressing cumulative effects issues from a CEQA perspective in California and also from a water quality perspective, which is reflected in impaired watersheds and TMDLs and that kind of thing. We're really talking about these cumulative kind of effects. The point of all the CEQA and the NEPA analyses and the water quality analyses is that there's more than one way to address these measures or these effects. And the Green Diamond ACP, followed by all the permits that have come and the forest management WDRs, which incorporates all the relevant measures into it, is a system designed to either mitigate or avoid these potential effects that are cumulative in nature, especially. And so there's really more than one way to do things, and this permit reflects that notion. It's not to say that harvest rates can't be used or are invalid, it's just that the measures that are in place here are also valid, and they're a means of satisfying the board's obligations under CEQA and under the Water Code. And all these, as I say, all these measures are incorporated into the WDRs themselves to either avoid or mitigate environmental effects or to protect and improve water quality in the case of your obligations under the Water Code. And the EIS, the MATO, the initial study, all those documents that are referenced in this process showed that these measures, which are incorporated into the process, would protect water quality and improve water quality as required by the TMDLs, and also that will improve these aquatic habitat conditions overall. So from a CEQA perspective, I just wanted to give that comment on this idea that there's really only one way to protect water quality in regards to these issues and to address cumulative effects. Thank you.
Thank you. Any comments or questions? Thank you very much. I have one last speaker card for Gary Nielsen.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, board members and staff. My name is Gary Reinierson. I'm with Green Diamond Resource Company. I'm the manager for Forest Policy and Communications. First of all, I'd like to thank the staff and the board for the support of the development and the foresight to take this permit on. It's got a lot of foresight. It's a property-wide, while there still are two permits, one of the things that we've talked to staff about is in the future merging those two permits, our roads permit and this forest WDR together, so there'd only be one permit to administer in the future. But today, they are maintained as separate permits. One thing I do want to clean up from statement, just so there it's perfectly clear in the record, there is a portion of our property that is not covered by this permit, and that is the portion of the property that is in the Trinity River Basin. The Trinity River Basin was not included in our aquatic habitat conservation plan and is not subject to this permit. So just so we're clear and the record's clear on that. And that's a very minor portion of our overall ownership. I submitted a letter to the board after the workshop. I'm not going to go over that letter, but it points out some of the key issues that came up during that workshop regarding our harvesting practices and tries to touch back and address some of the issues, specifically the rate of harvest. One of the things that I wanted to really point out, and Katie did a great job on her presentation, is this WDR is implemented through the timber harvesting plan process. So not only do we already have 11 what we call hydrographic planning areas where we have site-specific and area-specific mitigation measures that we apply, but there's the second bite at the apple, so to speak, that if there's issues that are area-specific within a timber harvesting plan, those can still be addressed through that timber harvesting plan review and approval process. So that's how this gets implemented. There's still those opportunities. We have a very extensive monitoring program that's outlined in the letter. Just to be clear, we do have monitoring, turbidity monitoring sites in the Klamath Basin. We currently have two in Apaw. We're establishing some two additional sites. We also collaborate with the Yurok tribe, and they have three monitoring sites in the Klamath Basin that we work with. Wayne did a great job pointing out how the cumulative effects are addressed through our actions, through our activities, how we manage our roads, how we manage our harvesting, how we don't do any even age tractor harvesting anymore. All of that is what we call shovel yarding, where we use large machines with big tracks that in some cases don't even disturb the duff layer post harvesting. So we don't do broadcast burning. We take a lot of that material off and use it and utilize it as biomass, or do limited pile burning. Also, the issue came up in some of the comments about the whether or not the forest practice rules deal with the rate of harvest. There were substantial changes in 1993 to the forest practice rules that reduced the size back down to about 20 acres. Our average harvest unit is 20 acres. Our average opening size is 15 acres. Forest practice rules are designed to move the impacts across space and time, and we certainly do that. One of the other issues that came up in one of the papers was that identified some tractor harvesting on our property. We stopped doing the tractor harvesting and even age management since 2006. Also, it's pointed out that 26% of our area of our land right now is either in a no harvest or a very limited harvest area. Also, one of the reports that's been cited quite a bit, and I know many of the scientists who commented. I have great respect for them. However, the report, the so-called Klein report, is based primarily on a retrospective look at forest practices, not the current practices or the practices we propose under this plan. So with that, I think I'll stop, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Gary. Any comments or questions for Mr. Reinerson?
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Olson?
Unless you guys have comments. On the point of order that was raised previously, the meeting announcement makes clear that the Regional Water Board may refuse to accept late comments. And so generally this is a pretty informal thing. I would hearing no objection from the rest of the board members on the decision announced to not accept the late comment. But if you would like, just to make it a little more formal, make sure there are no objections from the other board members.
Fair enough. Are there any objections from other board members to Mr. Corbett?
Yeah, not an objection, but a clarification. By tradition, we've allowed the chairman to rule, and if board members don't like it, they can make a motion to overrule the chair. There was no such motion.
Duly noted. Thank you for that point of clarification. Any comments for Mr. Reinerson? Thank you, Gary.
Thank you.
I have no other speaker cards for this item. Katie, can you come back up and address this, please? Any comments or questions for staff? Mr. Corbett.
I had one. I'm sorry, going back to elk. My understanding, and I got this out of the permit, but again, I think it's very important to clarify in the record, is that the Green Diamond discharge in the Elk River watershed will be below the major impact areas.
That is how the findings were written in the original WWDR, and there's, as you know, a TMDL in development for the Elk River, and I'm not sure exactly what the geography of that will be, but we made sure that there's a lot of site-specific management measures that will anticipate the TMDL, hopefully, and if changes need to happen after the TMDL is approved, then we can always make changes to this to make sure that any other impacts are dealt with.
I understand that, but within the context of the existing discharge, is it your understanding that where the streams come in from Green Diamond would be below the high impact areas of that watershed?
It's below what is commonly known as the nuisance reach.
Okay, and I want to state again from the board, we specifically refused to accept that term. It has legal consequences, and so we treat it as the impact area.
The impact area, got
okay.
It.
And I've clarified that now two or three board meetings, and would require a whole hearing all by itself and has major implications. So.
Mr. Chair? One other proposed edit, actually. You look in the general conditions, page 14. Condition B is a clause that talks about informal dispute resolution. And then condition C says, notwithstanding that general condition B, compliance with these mitigation measures are requirements under the order and violation subjects Green Diamond to enforcement. As you know, this permit only works if the conditions of the HCP and others are made enforceable. And so it's a minor change, but it needs to be not only the mitigation measures, but also all other conditions.
Yeah.
And so I propose that we make that change.
And I'm prepared to make amendments along those lines.
Well, can I ask point of clarification, too, that, and it, this was briefly mentioned earlier, this aquatic habitat conservation plan and permitting also recognizes the authority and the conditions of other permitting mechanisms that are out there. Is that correct? So,
but I think we do need the, I had concerns on these provisions, and I believe council has concerns on these provisions, and I think a very tiny amendments could go a long way towards strengthening the permit.
Yeah, I mean, it's very important that they become enforceable conditions by the water board, and that's the point. And I think that's the intent of BNC, but we just need to make sure the language reflects that. So I would.
But a little bit point of order, let's get a motion and get a permit and then get into amending the permit.
Okay. One question, Katie. These WDRs, like all, have a life to them. This is a 5-year.
No.
Is that correct?
Waivers have a 5-year time on it.
So let me ask you, this has the monitoring reporting program has, I noticed that it has a reporting program that comes back to staff. How does this mechanism report back to us as a board? We're approving a program forward, which I like. I think that's good. Do you foresee how this could come back to us in some timely manner or in some regular manner that we could hear about this too? I assume that, you know, this isn't the first, I don't think, habitat conservation plan we've seen, but nonetheless, this is a large acreage. This is a process of going forward and working under one management. So how do you see this coming back? Or I guess I would put a request out there to see this again in the future and have you or staff address us in a timely manner on how this is going.
We could certainly report back to you on the monitoring and reporting program, either by request or as some routine recurrence.
Okay.
Sure. And then just to clarify a little bit, I believe we still have residual 13267 additional reports that could be required. And 4H, page 15, reaffirms that it's a privilege, not a right to discharge. Right. And page 16B6. Has could affect language, which in my opinion gives backup authority to the board to fix environmental problems to the maximum extent jurisdictionally allowed under the Port of Cologne Act with the highest burden of proof on the discharger allowed by law. So those are our safety provisions on the permit.
As it should be.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Hale.
As an adaptive component of this, I do believe I read in here that if there are concerns about how results are coming forward, it's at the EO's discretion that we can make some changes to that's exactly how it's built in.
That's
so,
right.
So we have that feedback mechanism. And so building along where Mr. Norton was going, asking about how you can circle back to us, I'd actually like to make a request that once the first MRP report, the annual monitoring reporting plan, comes in, that we get a presentation on that.
Okay.
I'd like to see how those results are pairing out and just if things are meeting expectations. In light of some of the concerns that have been raised as well by some of the commenters, so it gives an opportunity to just take a look at that. But I'm interested in that. I think the board would be interested in hearing that as well.
Certainly.
Great.
Okay. Any other comments or questions from the board? Seeing none.
And I'd like to move that we adopt the permit. There will be an amendment that I'd like before we take a vote. I do want to say this came out of a board subcommittee 7 or 8 years ago, where the environmental problems were defined as not having a large enough scale to deal with cumulative impact, the fact that restoration permits took too much time and were costing 40% of the projects were going for the permit process, a more targeted approach and better agency coordination. On the industry side, they needed more certainty, they needed reduced agency conflict, a more rational and efficient permit system. And I do want to say that I believe over the status quo, this is a huge net gain. I do observe that it takes this at 7 years, and I have two other ways that I've been trying to make the permit process more efficient. It takes way too long in our system to make our permits more efficient, more comprehensive, and better. But nevertheless, it's a huge step forward. I also want to go the intellectual challenge of this. I don't think people realize, but you have to combine the Federal Endangered Species Act, subsections HCP, the Clean Water Act 401, Zeeburg-Nedgeley Act, Fish and Game, and every one of these has potential conflicting environmental approaches, property right protection approaches, levels of certainty approaches, and burdens of proof both on the agency and the owner that are very different. And even the translation from waiver language to a waste discharge permit under some circumstances could be illegal, even under the terms of the Port of Cologne Act. So it's an extremely challenging effort to put together this sophisticated a permit, and both took staff and Green Diamond and I think comments from the environmental community to get us to where it goes forward. I've mentioned already why I think we can fix any potential problem legally in the permit. I did want to propose two amendments. And the first is to amend on page 14. And this would be under B. And this would be to have a period after discussion and then delete the subsequent language, which I think creates a confusing burden of proof and decision-making authority. I do want to indicate in doing this, however, in future permits, and even perhaps in this one, the board does want to encourage a meet and confer process. I think that's a way to really solve problems on the ground. So this should not be interpreted as hostility to a meet and greet process. And then I would like to, under C, 4C, page 15, on the second sentence, after the word mitigation or the phrase mitigation measures, add and all other conditions, and then the rest of the sentence to read as it is. So it would read, notwithstanding general condition B above, comma, above compliance with these regulation measures and all other conditions are requirements under this order. And so I'd like to move that as an amendment to the main motion.
Mr. Chair, and just so we're lacking a second on the first motion, and we'll need a second on the second motion.
Okay. I will give you a second. Mr. Corbett moved to adopt the permit. I will give you a second in order to do that. And now I think we're up to his amendment.
Okay, so duly noted then. We would have a proposal to adopt and a second to adopt number resolution R1-2012-007 with the two amendments introduced by Board Member Corbett. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 All those opposed? Seeing none, then we are adoptive of R1-2012-007 with said amendments.
8-7.
Sorry. With amendments. Stand corrected. Thank you, Katie, very much. We're going to take a 10-minute break, and we'll be back to take on items number 2 and 3.
Mm-hmm. With amendments. I got confused.